Welcome to the Menstruation to Motherhood podcast. My name is Kathy Ann Ellison. I am the resident fertility coach here, and I help women to choose themselves first, stand in their feminine power in order to stop making their fertility issues mean something about them. If that's you, keep listening. This is the place you want to come to if you are a woman who is ready to feel empowered and unapologetically choose yourself first. You're done with letting society tell you what you should do and who you should be. You're ready to set, maintain, and own your boundaries in order to protect your mental health and your peace of mind. You're ready to show up at home and at work as your most empowered self. So let's get into the episode today. Welcome to this episode of the Menstruation to Motherhood podcast. My name is Kathy Ann Ellison, and today our guest is Aye Brandy. Aye Brandy is a licensed associate professional therapist and founder of the My Therapist is Black. Aye holds an education specialist in professional counseling. My Therapist is Black provides a community for Black therapists. Before launching My Therapist is Black, Aye was a serial entrepreneur with ventures in education, culinary, and mental health. After a successful career being of service, providing services that meet the needs of consumers, Aye has decided to shift her focus to the needs of Black therapists. Aye specifically works with therapists who want to expand their reach beyond their practice. Therapists in the My Therapist is Black community will receive therapy, coaching, courses, and providing products that transform lives. Aye loves reading, spending time in nature, networking, and being a mom of her 15-year-old son. Aye is available to network, coach, and consult with therapists who want to extend their reach beyond their private practice. And we'll share her information at the end of the podcast on how you can connect with her. But today we have a juicy, juicy, juicy topic for you. We are talking about the women in their 30s and 40s who feel like they're being left behind when it comes to their careers, their love life, having a baby, and all of that good stuff. There was an article that came out that we were reading maybe like a couple of weeks ago, and her and I were having a conversation about it. And it talks about women in their 30s and 40s who feel like they're being left behind, like they're not where they want to be in their careers, they're not where they want to be in their relationships, they're not where they want to be in being a mother. And with this podcast being called Menstruation to Motherhood, and some of you already knowing my journey where I have fertility issues, and I made the choice to correct those issues naturally on two separate occasions. Once with my daughter, where I was misdiagnosed with PCOS, and then found out that my diagnosis should have been estrogen dominance. I corrected that and was able to have her at a home birth. And then the second was my son, where because my progesterone levels were low, I had 3 miscarriages prior to being able to get pregnant with my son, when I made corrections myself naturally using herbs. And then he was able to stay strong. I held him for 40 weeks and 3 days and was able to have him. So my daughter was born, I was 37, and my son was born, I was 44. And I made that decision early on as I was planning to have a certain level of, I guess, expertise and working on my career and wanting to have a master's degree in occupational therapy and all that, decided I wasn't going to have children at the same time that I was going to be in college and going to get my degree, because I didn't want the stress of handling school and handling children. So I decided and made the choice to have my children in my 30s. I actually thought I wasn't going to have my first child until I was 40, but I had my daughter at 37. I had my son at 44. So I don't consider myself a geriatric mother at all. I feel like I'm alive and alert and just can take care of them in the way that they need to be taken care of. So I'm going to pass it on to Aye and let her share a little bit more about what she thinks about this topic and what she's come across with this issue.
So hi everyone, my name is Aye Brandy. And I am a mom who had my first kid at 28 and didn't plan for him or nothing like that. Was very, very excited, you know, when I found out I was pregnant with him. Didn't think much about having more kids, never planned for this one to begin with, really, you know. I was gonna be the fun auntie, you know, the auntie where come around, it's like, oh my God, Auntie I is here. And, you know, and I take the kids on trips and do all these things. I didn't expect to have him, but was super excited when I found out I was having him, and just been a wonderful experience for the both of us. And, you know, it's been one of those things that at 43 now, I found myself wanting to have another kid within the last, several years. But being single has put a damper on that. I don't want to do it by myself. Me and his dad were together raising him, you know, actively in the household for most of his life. And then now we co-parents from different states, but, you know, his dad is very involved in his life. His dad, you know, has come over to my house and fixed things, and he stayed here with him and things like that. My son is now 15. And, you know, that's another thing, you know, having another kid when your kid is 15 is like a whole different, it's starting over. I am part of that population of women who feel like, is this going to happen for me at this point? Mm-hmm. You know, I hear the stories. I mean, Janet Jackson had her son at 50, but it's like, that's Janet Jackson. You know what I mean? She has support and herbs and, you know, all these doctors. And I don't think that it's that I can't have kids. You know, I'm very healthy. I'm functioning, but I just think about, has my time passed? Mm-hmm. That's where I am.
Right.
Has my ability to be patient with her kid again past. You know, I raised my son as a single child and I saw the effect that had on him, you know. So do I want to have two kids to kind of, you know, spend time with each other? Do I just want to have the one, or am I even gonna, the thoughts are just rolling around. And, you know, I'm not in a relationship, I'm not married, I don't even have like a potential suitor at this point in my life. And it's like, ooh, and I don't know how many of you feel the same way or in the same position as me, and you still want, you want that family, right? You want the kids, and or the kid, in my case, the kid, okay? The kid universe. Don't go send a bunch of them over here, because, you know, older moms sometimes tend to have multiples, right? Uh-huh. And, you know, just, it's all these thoughts about what's next? How do I prepare? I had a girlfriend who, in her case, she went through cancer. We're the same age, and before she, you know, she had cancer three times, so she froze her eggs. But at 43, she's thinking, I don't know if I want to have kids. Or she's 42, excuse me. She's like, I don't know if I want to have kids. And the same thing, she's not in a relationship. She's not serious with anyone. And it's like, you know, what do I want to do here? She doesn't have any kids at all. So she's like, well, maybe it's better to just not have none than to start now. Right. So I said a lot to just say, you know, it's a timing issue.
Mm-hmm. It's a big decision. It's not a decision that is taken, you know, lightly, because even with me deciding that, you know, that I was going to have my children at, you know, at the time that I was getting ready to start trying, it wasn't an easy decision. It was like, you think of and you see all of the younger moms, you see the women out there who've already had their children in their 20s. They're my age, 30, you know, like I'm looking back to when I had my, got pregnant with my daughter, 37. People I went to school with already had 18-year-olds, 17-year-olds, you know.
Same thing here. I have 43-year-old friends went to high school. They are on grandkids. Some of them are like 5 and 6 grandkids already. And I never, like I said, I never planned, so none of that makes me no difference. And I'm not so much bothered by being an older mom, so to speak. I think because I had my first one in my 20s, so I kind of got that, you know what I mean, 20s experience with my son. And it wasn't, it was fine because I already had my master's degree by the time he came along. I already had a career, I had a business. For me, it's more about being able to care for the child physically, emotionally, and financially. And so I feel like at this age, I'm definitely better at that than I was. And I couldn't have no child at 20. I'm just gonna be very truthful. 20, 23, 25, none of them ages right there, okay? I would not have been a good mother. I was still in the mindset of me, 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 me. What do me need? Me wants some shoes. Me wants to travel, you know? And so before my son came, I traveled. I lived in France for a while. I did things that I wanted to do. You know, since he's been here, I've taken him on cruises, vacations. And I don't think I would have been able to do that if I'd have had him too early and not been prepared for him. But for the moms who are like me, who still want that family, and we think about, is it too late?
Right.
And, you know, how do we move past that point of, how do we make that decision? I think the decision is compounded. If you're married and you and your spouse want it, I think it's kind of easier in the sense the decision has been made and you put the work in. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, in your case, you know, you and your husband wanted it, so you put the work in and you did the healing, and you know what I mean? It was never guaranteed, but at least you were on the same page and half of the formula was there.
Right.
But when you were single, for all those single moms who are listening that are older moms, maybe, you know, maybe you're past 40. Honestly, I feel like before 40s, you don't have nothing to worry about. But like once you're past 40, you're thinking, ooh, you start counting down to 50. Let's just be truthful. Right. I will be 44 this year in September. Mm-hmm. And right. I'm thinking, yikes, I'm 6 months out to 44 and 6 years to 50. What does it look like to have a 3 or 4 year old? Mm-hmm. And, you know, and people are like, is that your grandchild? No, this is my child. And it's just, you know, it's those type of things as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's so much to unpack when it comes to that. So much to unpack. Like you mentioned about, you know, having your master's degree by the time you had your son. And that was a big part of me deciding to wait. I wanted to be in a position where I was able to make money and have a career in place where I can afford to have a child. Even though I was told by a close family member when I got pregnant with my daughter that, you know, why am I getting pregnant now? You know, it's hard out there raising children. Children are expensive.
Well, they always are. That part never changes. I mean, let's just be truthful. It will always be there. And I think the responsibility factor to not just have kids because not that you don't want them, but there's a responsibility factor here, right? We all have things that we want to give our kids. You know, I come from teenage parents. And so that was my big thing of not having kids early because my parents struggled. And they weren't together and they had different spouses. And then you got to struggle. You struggled with them. And the struggle is different at different ages. And I just knew I couldn't be nobody's mom at no 15 or 16 or any of those ages. You know, but then the struggle is, there's always a struggle to me at any age to have them. You have to pick your struggle. And that wasn't one I was willing to pick, the early, having children early. You know, my girlfriends are now, all of my girlfriends, even my cousin who is 37, she just turned 37, her two kids are 11 and 14 and she's done. And I don't have anyone in my family currently having kids that is my age. And so all of them are done. I have one cousin who is 44 and she's 43, she'll be 44 in the next couple of weeks. And she's thinking about having another one. And she's in a relationship and she's thinking about it. And she's like, oh, between now and 46 is kind of like the cutoff. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what that's going to look like.
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe we can form a community of moms who, you know, the 40s club, you know, moms at 40, because I think there is a level of support that we will need, you know what yeah. I mean? To yeah. talk about, you know, the decisions and, you know, feeling like you missed out. That's yeah. what I think I feel like sometimes is mm-hmm. that maybe I should have just had the other kid after that one, but I wasn't emotionally ready. I was like, oh my God, I have a whole human that needs me for everything. And I'm still trying to manage my life. You know, my career has started and I was in a good place, but I was decided after he was born, I was going to leave my settled job, my stability and security, and jump into entrepreneurship with a toddler. with a mortgage and a spouse who was unsure about what that would look like for the family. Mm-hmm. And he was supportive, but he was like, well, why do you have to leave now? You know, because the security was threatened, and yeah, it was threatened, and it led to, you know, the breakup and all those things. And so then you think about, you know, all of these things as an older mom and as somebody who feel like, you know, you've been left behind. So I full on sometimes pray and say, God, I need your guidance here. Which way do you want me to go with this? Because I really don't know.
Right. And that's what it ultimately boils down to, is you seeking, you know, that support and seeking that wisdom to try to help guide you, you know, and try to help you figure out, is this something I really need to be doing? Is this something I really feel ready to do? Because you don't want to allow society and other people to tell you, because you ultimately are responsible for that baby when it gets here.
Yes. and how it changes your life.
Yes.
So I have a 15-year-old. I can leave food in a microwave or in the oven for him. Mm-hmm. And he'll warm it up and eat it. I can't do that with a baby, right, or even a 5-year-old. Mm-hmm. So then it's all these years of your life dedicated to the upkeep of this person, right, until they're old enough to upkeep themselves. And really, honestly, that is not almost for like 10 years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, because you're not letting your 7 to 8 year old warm food in the microwave. You are preparing food for them still. They're not staying in the house by themselves. You are finding a babysitter or trucking them along with you. Mm-hmm. Your decisions change. And that's where I think if you are a single mom making this decision, you're thinking, what do I do? You know, how do I do this? But then I think about all of the grandparents who are taking care of grandkids. Mm-hmm. You know, they're almost parents again too.
Yeah.
You know, in my work, I have a young lady who is, she's 7 years old, and her grandma is like 55, and her grandma has her full time because her parents are not responsible.
Wow.
So every decision she makes is, this is the woman who raised her 3 children, and now she's taking care of her son's daughter. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because her son is not responsible, and neither is the mom. So she's a mom again. So then I think, if she can do that at 55, why can't I do it? Yeah. Is it any different?
I've seen that. The place where I take my daughter for dance, there's a lady who brings, well, she is literally her daughter. And she's actually, I believe, the daughter of a cousin in the family who can no longer take care of her. And she's 8 years old, and this lady is in her 50s and dealing with her own personal medical, you know, things. And she's raising this little girl in her 50s.
So I think society is what is really getting in the way. If we are to be truthful, society is saying you can't have the kids, but you can take care of them. Because there is no difference between being in your 50s and 60s and taking care of your grandkids or a cousin's family or any of that, and taking care of your own kids. Let's just be truthful. What is the difference?
Right. And that's what helped me to feel more grounded and secure in my decision to have my children when I did. And one of the people who were an ongoing inspiration for me was Yolanda Adams before I had my daughter. Because she had her daughter at 39. Okay. And she was considered old at the time. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you have Yolanda Adams on the radio. I used to listen to her radio show, and she's talking about her daughter who's young and becoming a preteen and all these different things. And she's in now, you know, Yolanda Adams is now in her late 40s, going into 50s. And she's talking about a child who's not even in high school yet. So I'm listening to her. I'm pulling on her experience to help me feel like, why can't I do that? Like, what's, you know, there's nothing wrong with me having a child after 35, because that's when they say your eggs start drying up and all that. After 35, they used to consider you a geriatric mother. So I allowed her experience to help me feel secure in my choice.
Yeah, I definitely think that there are people, like I said, Janet Jackson had her baby at 50. Halle Berry had her second son at 48, I think it was. Mm-hmm. So it's not unheard of.
Right.
I've even had heard of in some, non-Western communities. And I think that's a Western construct.
you know, in some non-Western communities where people are having kids much later, 48, 49, even early 50s, and they're healthy and they're sane and the community kind of participates. So I think it's a Western construct of when you're supposed to have kids, when you're supposed to get married, when you're supposed to go to college, like you're supposed, and when those supposed don't happen, we have the breakdown.
Yes, and people start dealing with a lot of mental issues around these things.
And the breakdown is where I think a lot of us moms who or want to be moms or whatever are dealing with that left behind of motherhood. Motherhood is such a big decision that we're forced and pushed into it and we don't often choose.
Yeah, I've seen that.
And so navigating that space and what it means and the tools for that. Our society, our American society does not support motherhood. I don't care what they say. They don't.
That is true, especially with postpartum care.
No, they don't. It doesn't exist. It's not enough leave. Mm-hmm. It's not enough people to wrap around you when you have the kids. Mm-hmm. It's not enough job support. You know, a lot of women waited late to have kids because in their careers, they couldn't climb if they had kids. Because your boss was say to you, we're not supposed to care, so we don't care that you need to take your kid to school at 8:30, but you need to be here at 8 o'clock.
Right.
We don't care that you need to leave at 3 o'clock because, you know, the job is to 4. So then you didn't take those jobs. You took less jobs, paying less, and so then women on the whole make less money because right. The jobs that we could take, not because we don't qualify, but because a man, because it ain't nobody else but a man, decided that this is what I need you to fit into.
Right.
But oh, wait, the world is not having kids. There are less births, live births now than ever before because women are not having kids. We're tired of being told what to do.
Right. And then another thing too is one of the things that I focus on with clients is the fact that, like you say, this world is structured around the male 24-hour cycle and things along that cycle instead of, yes, there is that cycle, but there's also the feminine cycle. When you start your menstruation, when you enter that sense and that space of womanhood, we now have a 28-day cycle that we need to pay attention to in addition to that 24-hour cycle.
Yeah, we do. And we constantly work around that, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And that 24-hour cycle affects our 28-day cycle mm-hmm. because the stress of fitting into a male-dominated world as a woman in dealing with your own stressors affect that. How often has a woman period has been off or been completely out of whack with her hormones? Like you mentioned, your progesterone and all, mm-hmm. because we are so stressed in fitting into that world.
Yep, so true.
And managing that.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, so it's not, it's not just becoming a mom and then you get told, oh, she's just on her period. And it's like, it's in such a negative tone.
Oh, I just hate to hear that. I hate when people say that. Just hate it.
It's like,
it like breaks me in such a wrong way when you just boil it down to that. I'm like, oh, it's more than just that, people. It's more than just that.
But it's like it's like a negative thing, you know, the very life-producing, life-changing thing that happens that bring life in, you disregard and disrespect it. And I think that that's part of the missing part of humanity for women, right? It's like something is wrong with, like, even in religions, right? A lot of religions, I know my friend is Muslim, and when you are doing Ramadan and you're bleeding, you can't do it, which to me is interesting because I would think that's the most natural part of being a woman, but you're considered unclean and dirty. How can I be unclean when I birthed a child because of this bleeding process? So it's like women are stuck once again in male-dominated social constructs.
Yes, yes. And it kind of strangles us.
It does. It strangles our decision-making, like we just talked about for the age, about the careers you're going to choose, about the life you're going to live. And then it's like, you know, bad moms is more likely to be a hindrance than a bad dad.
Right. Wow.
And I don't know. So where do we go from here? How do you as a woman, how do you as a mom who is older or who hasn't had kids yet? And, you know, even if you're 30, right? Let's just not take it to our age yet. Let's just look at the 30-year-olds, right? I mean, a mommy group on Facebook, and this mommy group is like 14,000. It's a bunch of women in this group. It's super duper huge. But how do you as a mom of, at 30, decide I'm going to wait, or I'm going to have kids now, or my career hasn't really taken off? And how do you make those decisions? And are those decisions really yours, or are they society's way of thinking?
Right.
I'm just not sure of where do we go from there. And then when you throw in, a lot of women are suffering from hormonal imbalance, and they're told they can't have kids, or don't even bother, or, you know what I mean? Or PCOS or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
What's the step?
Yeah, one of the things I get clients to focus on is the support system. The support system. And there was a training, like a pre-training I did years back, probably like 5 years ago, that talks about one of the things. It was getting ready for baby now. And I would go through and ask questions like, what are the things that you need to start thinking about? You need to start changing and putting in place so that you can prepare for that baby that you're saying that you want. You know, and having a support system was one of the things I talked about. Like, who is it that's there for you to vent to when you're feeling like we're talking about today, like you're left behind, like you're losing out, like you're not on pace with this arbitrary, you know, timeline that has been created by society, by others who are not, most likely not women. You know, who is there for you to go and vent to? Who do you have in place? You know, who do you have to support you when you do get pregnant? What type of professional are you going to work with? Are you going to work with a midwife? Are you going to go to an OBGYN to support you? Who's going to be the person to gird you up and keep you focused and keep you on that path of knowing that you're supported and you're taken care of? Who's going to be there after you have the baby? Or is there someone that's going to pre-cook the meals and you have meals already in your freezer and, you know, you can just heat up really quickly because now you know, you're healing from just having this baby, you're bonding with your child. You can't be up cooking and running around. It's just so impossible. It's just so impossible. Like, my support system was very small, because not a lot of those around me. And plus I had moved from New York to Georgia right before I got pregnant with my daughter. So it was basically me and my husband. And then whoever my mentors were and people that I connected with that I knew who were in the wellness arena, who were more into the wellness and the natural things, who could support what I was doing. Because I changed my diet. I went from eating meat and dairy and all these different things to 90% raw vegan.
Yeah.
Going into my pregnancy.
Wow.
My husband and I even drove from Atlanta, Georgia to Houston, Texas, while I was 4.5 months pregnant with my daughter, so we can get trained as raw vegan chefs. So I can learn and he can learn how to prepare meals for me.
Okay.
Because that was the diet I was on at the time.
Okay.
So what lengths are you going to go to? What things are you going to put in place to support what you've decided to do to prepare your body, to prepare your mind, and to be able to take care of this child even after it's born? Like, the first month after my daughter was, like, she was a home birth. I had a midwife. I had a doula. I did not use an OBGYN. That was my choice. People around me, like my mom, she did not agree with me having a home birth. She was born at home. She was born breech. Wasn't planned, though. But she survived, and that's how she was born, and she's okay.
Yeah.
Even in her birth experience, I was born in the hospital because that was what was expected.
That was what your mom, yes.
Mm-hmm. So when I made the choice to give birth at home, because I didn't have a difficult pregnancy. I didn't have any complications or any major issues during my pregnancy. So I was a prime candidate to be able to have a child at home without any issues.
Mm-hmm.
She didn't agree. There was no talking between us for a while. She didn't come see my daughter until she was 3 months old. So you have to decide who your support system is going to be and be okay with people that you love not agreeing with you, but standing and understanding what your body's able to do, what you feel comfortable with. You're not putting yourself in danger. Your baby's not in danger.
Mm-hmm.
Have people there who can guide you through. I have my
midwife. Who are professionals and this is what they do. Yeah,
I agree. 30-something years. I chose her because she had 30-something years of experience birthing babies at home.
Yeah.
Even her own.
And you were comfortable with the decision you made, but right. I think that you made the decision. And so in this conversation about being a mom or one that feels left behind or any of those, even just there's often not a decision to be made. It's often you just do this. You know what I mean? It's a natural thing. I think COVID has made moms start to realize that maybe we need to make different choices as far as hospital births are concerned, because there is no fun in having a baby by yourself. You know what I'm saying? Like, a lot of dads didn't make it to the hospital to see their children being born because of COVID and the way that COVID worked out. And so when you think about that, now we are making different choices. I think doulas and midwives are becoming way more popular, because especially for Black women, we're talking about the life expectancy. We're talking about the mortality rate of being a mom and surviving after you have your child. And it has nothing to do with how much money you have or nothing. I mean, Serena Williams talked about it. Judge Hatchett lost her daughter-in-law because of that. Because as a Black woman, especially, they don't take our pain serious. There's this sort of martyr that's on our top of our forehead that said, we can take all the pain and we can carry the whole world's problems. Part of that is our fault, part of that is white supremacy, and part of that is the fact that nobody cares about us like they should. And so, you know, this decision to, not to scare anyone, but this decision to have a child later in life is a tough one. There was a young lady in the mommy group I was in. I don't even think she was 40. I think she was like 39. And she had two kids, right? She had a daughter who was older. She had a daughter at a younger age. And I think her daughter was like 17 or so. But anyway, she had a daughter at a younger age. And then she had her son who was like 4 or 5. And then she got a divorce and, you know, her new partner didn't have a kid, decided to have a kid, and she died in childbirth. There were no signs.
Oh my God.
There was nothing. And so it's just, you wonder, did the hospitals do enough? Because so many Black women die now. The mortality rate is as if to say no one cares. And I remember having my son and how caring my nurse was. I remember I was like hollering and screaming, and she politely just came to me and she said, that doesn't help. It doesn't make it any better. Would you like? And she was so calm about it. And I was just as loud as I don't know why I thought, it just made me feel better to holler. And she was like, let me help you with the breathing so that you can, you know, you can time the pain and breathe through it. And she did, but she took the time to care.
Good.
You know, she took the time to care for me and make sure that afterwards when I got the stitches that they were clean, mm-hmm. and she showed me what to do. Right. Nobody is doing that anymore. The world is so busy, so that I get the decision to have a home birth is a personal one, but it's probably a safe one considering right. what all we go through right. as women.
Mm-hmm. And even though my daughter was birthed at home, it was planned and all of that, I attempted to do the same with my son. It didn't work out that way. I labored at home for 2 days.
Okay.
Safe. And then it got to where I was contracting and he wasn't moving down anymore.
Okay.
He was stuck under my left ribs. He was just stuck in that one spot and I felt him there and he would not move. So my husband called 911, so we had to transport.
Okay.
That was all part of our plan. Right. We already knew, okay, when it mm-hmm. we communicated, we knew, okay, it's time. So we transported, and then he had to follow the ambulance to the hospital. By the time he got there, my son was born. And we lived 5 minutes from the hospital.
Wow.
So by the time they got me up from the house into the ambulance, drove there, got me from the gurney into the receiving area where—
He's like, I'm ready now.
Right. They got me from the receiving area. I even had to stop them from what they were doing and how they were trying to get me into the wheelchair. I'm like, wait. I had to move the leg rest out the way. Then I got up, got into the wheelchair. By the time I got to the wheelchair, I had 2 contractions and he was here. But yeah. I had to alert them that he was here. Because I'm telling them, when the first contraction hit and I felt him move down, I said, the baby's coming. They're standing there because now I've placed them, my situation has placed them in like, okay, what do we
do? They don't know what else to do.
What do we do with her? She didn't come in the regular way. Like, she's ready. You know, we can't, she's not laid out where we're putting IVs in her and all this stuff. She's ready. So I'm sitting in the wheelchair. They're trying to get me through the door to go to, I guess, labor and delivery.
Yeah.
And I got that contraction and they couldn't
get me. You already knew.
I had to pick my leg up, put it over the side of the chair because he was coming.
Yeah.
And then they're trying to figure it out. And next one that came, I'm like, the baby's here. And then the nurse had to squat down. She squatted down. She had to hold him. They clamped, cut, and took him. Yeah. Then they had to figure out what to do with me.
Yeah. I think that they're in autopilot, and we are as humans in autopilot.
Yes. And that's the thing about birth, though. It's not automatic, and it's not a cookie-cutter process.
It is. Everybody is different.
Every woman is so different. And that's one of the reasons why I chose home birth.
Okay.
You know, both times, even though my son ended up being born, he was still not born. You know, they still weren't proud of the process of helping him come into the world. He came, you know, without their assist. But that's one of the reasons, because I'm like, I don't like to be forced into a box of you have to do it this way, when naturally that's not how it's happening. But you're still trying to force me into a way that is not what's occurring in front of you.
Yeah.
And I didn't want my children to be forced into that. I didn't want to be placed, you know, so it was like a lot of making that decision.
And I think that that's the thing, like you said, what are you willing to do? And I was listening to you and you were like, you know, going raw vegan and choosing a home birth and all these things. And I don't think that that's the education piece that's available for the decision making. Oftentimes when decisions have to be made, people don't know what goes into the decision. And so they get stuck and stagnated and they never make a decision. They either miss the window of opportunity or they get dragged through the window of opportunity.
Right, right. Because even after they took him and then they placed me in a room where it wasn't a regular patient room that they used. So it wasn't set up that way. So there was no chair for my husband to sit in. I was up on the bed with my knees up, them trying to stitch me up, and they had to inject me. I think I remember either 4 or 5 times that they had to inject me with painkiller to numb me, and it didn't work either time. I don't know what dosage they were using, but it didn't work. And every time I moved to tell them it hurts, they were getting angry at me because they're like, I can't help you if you keep moving. I was like, but it hurts.
And I think that's, birth is different. So when people ask me what your birthing experience was, and I always say it's different. Number one, I was 28. I didn't have any idea of what the process was going to look like. I always tell people my son's head was extremely huge. So I had to get an episiotomy, and I refused to go to the bathroom. I didn't eat nothing for like a week. I was eating like a bird because I did not want to deal with that. So it's all of these pieces that, you know what I mean? People don't tell you about, but because it's not that they don't want to tell you, it's just that the experience is different for all of us and how it works. And, you know, he came out in a couple of hours. Labor wasn't, you know, intensive for long, whereas my niece's mom was in labor for 37 hours. Mm-hmm. You know, everybody's labor is different. My aunt had 3 children. They all were out by the time she said, oh, it's hurting. They were out.
I squatted to look at something my husband was showing me at like 10 o'clock in the morning, the day she was born, and my water broke.
Yeah. And all children are different.
Yeah. And she wasn't born until like 7:30 that night. And when I initially called the midwife to tell her that my water broke, and then I was telling her how far apart the contract, she was like, I don't think you're going to have the baby today.
Wow.
And then like 4 hours later, and I called her because she told me, just keep me updated on how your contractions are going. They were all over the place. And when I call her back to give her that report, she's like, I'm just going to come by and check on you and see how you're doing. So that was the only time I was checked my whole pregnancy. And I've known of women who say that when they go to the OBGYN for every follow-up, you know, every month, and then when you get closer, you go every 2 weeks, and then every week when it gets closer, and they check them every time. Mm-hmm. Vaginally check. I was never checked until the day I was in labor.
Yeah, it's a different experience for everyone. Some people are high risk. Some people just are comfortable with the situation. And some of us honestly just don't know no better. I remember telling my OBGYN, I'm not going to keep coming here. So we're gonna have to figure out how this gonna work out. And I remember my family being upset with me, and because I had went to the OBGYN, and I want to say maybe 2 weeks before my son was born. I don't even know if it was 2 weeks before, and I was like, listen, we're not gonna do this. Like, I'm not coming back over here. And she was like, come every week. I don't even know if you're gonna see me again until I call you to tell you I'm going to hospital. And then I remember, I fell at work and I had to go to the darn emergency room. And they were, I think at that point, I had to go because now I was, you know, afraid that, you know, something would happen to him. The last time I went, it was like a couple of days before he was born. I think my water didn't break, but I was starting to dilate. And my aunt was like, I said, I don't feel nothing. I'm gonna be fine. I'm gonna stay right here. Now my water didn't break. They had to break my water. My water never broke. They broke my water. And then like a couple of hours later, I could, you know, like they broke my water, like 4 in the morning. I think, and he got here at 2 p.m. Wow. On the day. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, all of our labor experience is different. You don't know those hours until you come out of it. You just know this is taking forever. Mm-hmm. I don't know when the shower gonna come, but I'm gonna need y'all to do something quickly and get him out of here. You know, and then you have the epidural experience, and then you have the Pitocin experience. And it's like, it's just so many different experiences. You wonder who come up with this process. Like, what man? Because ain't no woman decided this is what I don't think we had no say so in this. I feel like it was some man that says, this is process one, process two, process three. Because I feel like as a woman, we would have known the pain and we wouldn't have created no process that looked this dumb.
I wanted my process to be as least invasive as possible.
And I agree with you there because I think that that is such a personal time. I remember going to see the OBGYN and I remember thinking, if I have another baby, I'm not coming back to this practice. They were nice people. But I remember it was like 5 or 6 of them. And she was like, oh, you have to see everybody because you don't know who's going to be available when it's time for you to have the baby. And so you have to be comfortable with all of them. And I'm thinking to myself, why? If that's the case, then just let the person show up at the hospital. I don't want to deal with this. And because the truth of the matter is, my doctor didn't do anything. It was the nurses that did everything to help me have the baby. Wow. He only came in the room when it was time to push.
Wow.
That's the only time he came in here, when he was coming out. And he didn't even do anything then. And then he asked me, and I was being nice about it, which I should have said no. But it was a student who needed to learn, and he asked if she could stitch me up. She was taking so long, I started to yell at her. Because I'm like, I need you to hurry up and move yourself from over there because I need this whole invasive experience to be over and let me just, you know what I mean, get my thoughts and stuff together. But I don't know at 43 if I could do that.
Right. Yeah. This is, you know, it is, like you say, it's a personal decision and it's a decision that's not made lightly. Yeah. You know, you just have to put those things in place that's going to make you feel good about the decision and you feel comfortable about the process that you're going to go through with the support that you need.
I see why so many people have surrogates now. Honestly, because you know, you just think about it and you think, you know, is carrying a baby really overrated now at this point? Mm-hmm. You know, and it's more about the safety of the child and the mother, you know, than anything else, because you know, at that point in life, you're just, you want to make sure the baby is okay and that you're okay. Right. I was on Instagram this morning and there was a video and the girl said, things that disturbed me after labor, they wanted me to take the child home with me and I just bust out laughing. And I was like, you know, and it's like, you know, it's like, you know, we every woman has a birthing story. Woman has a birthing story. And in that birthing story is some weird thing that happened.
Yeah, something's always going on. Whew. So for the woman that's listening to this and trying to decide, she's feeling left behind. She's feeling like life is passing her by. She doesn't have a child yet. Her career is not where she wants it to be.
Yeah.
What would you tell her? What was the one thing you would tell her to help her decide what she wants to do? Not that you're going to help her make the decision, but to help her, you know, guide her in that. On that path to assist?
I would tell her what I kind of tell most of my clients in making decisions. I do a brain dump. Just dump every thought, emotion onto a piece of paper. You know, whether you feel like you are being left behind, you know, you're being pulled, whatever that those emotions are, dumping on the paper. Because once you are clear on what your emotions are, and then sometimes for some people, it's not even a matter of do they... do they want to have kids, or are you doing it because society say you're not a complete woman unless you have kids? You know, are you just really desiring to have a child because you just love kids and you always wanted to have one of your own, and you just realize at 40 that maybe life is passing you by and maybe the career ain't perfect? I would say this, the career is never going to be perfect.
Right.
Because even when it's perfect, so to speak, when you are pregnant or having the child, it's going to change.
Right.
Life is about changes. So I would say really figure out what your desires are, where they're coming from. Is it societal desires or is it your true desires?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then once you figure out that it is your true desires, not societal desires, I think you can then make the choice that you're going to do this and or not do this. But it's not a decision to be taken in a day. It's a decision to be pondered over, prayed over, you know what I'm saying? Written down, looked at, revisited. You know, sometimes you just got to put it to the side. At one point I was so stuck on, oh my God, I'm about to be 40 and I don't have another kid, that I was driving myself crazy.
Yeah.
And so I just kind of put it to the side. And even now when I think about the fact that, like I said, I'm counting down to 50, so to speak, right? Not that 50 is a bad thing, but I think you just think 50 is definition of that's it, right? It's a whole new chapter in life. You've already lived, I don't know, 50 years of your life and then, you know, whatever. But I think about, I don't have to make this decision now. You know what I mean? Now you have choices. You can do a surrogate. You can adopt,
right?
You know what I mean? You can, there's so many things that are available to you as a woman. You can freeze your eggs. You know, you can do those things, and then you have to make the decision. Do I really want to do this? I think that's really what it have to come down to. What am I willing to give up in my life to do this? Because right. Being a mom means giving up some freedom. I don't care who helps you. It's still going to give up some freedom. Yeah. The freedom to use the bathroom without somebody calling your name is gone forever. Let's get that straight. It's never going to happen.
Even again. At 15 and 16, they still come.
Oh my God. They still call your name. It's still, and knock on your door for things that it's just like, why are you here? That freedom to, now my son tells me, I don't want you to use my bathroom. Why can't you go to your bathroom? Mind you, our house. I thought all the bathrooms. So then you have that. And the freedom to eat food that's only for you is gone. They want to taste everything you got. You never can eat anything by yourself, ever again.
That doesn't end either.
My father still shares his food with his kids and his grandkids. No, I think that's gone forever. So I want you to really think about that. And your money. Oh God, your money is never going to be the same. They always need something.
Ooh, baby. It's life changing. We have
it to is. That. But for somebody who wants that, those are small changes to give, to have a whole human that you get to add to this world.
Yes.
That's your gift to the world, your kids, right? They are your legacies that you get to leave.
Exactly.
Somebody you get to help to be their best version of themselves. Okay. There's no price on that. So that's how I say make the decision. If it's for vanity, because, oh, it's cute to have a kid, don't have none, because they will knock that down. You're going to be questioning your sanity if you're having kids for vanity or because you want to prove to people that you can, you know, you can have a child. Right. And, you know, it depends on your culture, right? Because certain cultures make you seem like you're less than because you don't have a kid, and you're not.
You're right.
No, or can you foster? If you have baby fever, can you foster? And you get that, you know what I'm saying, that feeling that way, you know, and maybe having a new baby in a house is not the thing, but maybe getting a five-year-old who's already potty trained and going to school might be the thing. I mean, there's just, I don't know. I don't think
there's so many choices, so many ways to show yourself as a mother.
Yes.
Out there.
Recite. And show up for the world in that way. So, but then I think it is even a struggle with those women that are dealing with menstruation, like you mentioned, those sort of issues, that becomes a thing as well.
Right. Yeah. That's why my focus with my clients is you know, focusing on the menstruation, getting that together, and then working on having that then be the catalyst for their fertility issues, and just having that foundation laid. And also we work on, you know, mindset and things like that. So
yeah. And I think a lot more women suffer from fertility issues than they even are aware of it at the time, because when you're in your 20s, you're told you can wait. I think being that women are a lot of women are waiting till their 30s to have kids, sometimes you don't even know you have fertility issues until that point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
So the decision is not an easy one to decide, but I think with what you're doing with your program, where you're helping them, these things didn't exist before.
Right.
You know, people didn't help you to get pregnant. You know, you just dealt with it. You know, you could or you couldn't. You tried and you tried and you tried. You know, I have a client and she told me that her husband had 7 miscarriages, and she just decided she wasn't going to do it. And when they adopted, since this woman is a nurse, she's an anesthesia nurse, and she just didn't know what else to do. So don't be fooled by this idea that you're educated, so you're supposed to know it. We only know what we know, and we don't know what we know.
A lot of what I did for myself was based on me researching, based on me going out there and asking questions among the people who were out in the wellness and more natural world of doing things. Because the first doctor who told me I had PCOS, and I didn't feel like that was my diagnosis, it just didn't sit well with me. And he just attempted, I would say, because I didn't accept it, he attempted to tell me and put it on me that I was never going to be able to have children, I was going to have early menopause. Neither the two of those end up being true. I have 2 children and I still haven't hit menopause. But the thing is, the second doctor I went to, she said that diagnosis shouldn't have been given to me because I was having a monthly period.
Yeah.
He just gave it to me because he saw the extra hair on my chin and the extra hair on my chest and my abdomen. And he just said, you have PCOS. I just need to.
And that's the thing, right? So listen, I'm not going to lie to you, that aggravates my nerve. You know, I have hormonal imbalance. I didn't have a problem getting pregnant with my son. I haven't tried to get pregnant since him. So I don't know what that looks like. I purposely tried not to get pregnant, okay? I had an IUD for God. How long did I have that IUD for? 10 years.
Okay.
So I've only gotten rid of it in the last, 4 or 5 years or so. But I haven't tried to have a baby since then. But I think that, you know, I come from a family that have diabetes. And so when I went to go get a diagnosis, I too never got a straight diagnosis. I was told I don't have PCOS, even though like you, I have the hair that grow out of everywhere. I'm just a hairy person. Like, unfortunately it won't go like, you know, my hair it grows, but it grows thin, right? Which is the part of hormonal imbalance, right? Hormonal imbalance, your hair does not grow thick. It grows, but it's just like, you're wasting my time with whatever way you're growing. But you know, it's that thing, especially, and I've had this my whole life. So I don't have diabetes, but I have I have the sugar imbalance or whatever that is. But I don't get affected by the highs and lows of diabetes, but it affects my hormone and my weight, especially in my stomach, my midsection area. So like in the last couple of weeks, I've been noticing that maybe I'm more stressed and putting more weight in my midsection than I have in months. So I know something is off. So it's kind of like, I don't know. I feel like I'm sometimes, and I don't know if other women listening can relate to this. You kind of feel like with all of this, do you really didn't want to add on having a child? Because the hormonal imbalance has been a struggle for my whole life. You know, like I take chromium. At one point I was taking metformin, and I was taking like the highest dosage, and it did nothing for me.
Wow.
Because I don't have diabetes. And so they were trying to manage whatever I have. I went to an endocrinologist. He was a Black man. He was good, but I felt like if it was a Black woman, it would have been much better. He was very kind of dismissive in a way, but he did try to help. We did all the, you know, because he's a hormone doctor. We did all the blood work, and my thyroid was both high and low. We corrected that. I still don't feel like this stuff is balanced. And you know, I'm sort of going in that direction of doing my own research to figure out where it is. I know certain foods tick me off, and so I stay away from those foods. I know I need to have ample amounts of fiber in my diet on a regular basis.
Right.
I know I need to reduce stress, which almost never happens.
And the good fats in your diet. And another thing to do is just look at, and I have a handout, like a at a glance thing. It's like a chart, like a 4-part chart that I give to clients, and I'm gonna send that to you.
Okay.
Put the information here in the show notes for how people can get it. It shows you how, based on what phase you are in your cycle, the best foods to eat to bring things into balance with your hormones.
I like that.
Yeah, so I have that. That
we don't get. Let's just be truthful. I like that. That's something we don't get. We don't get to see.
Yeah. So I have that. I'm gonna give that to you. And then I also recommend you get this book. It's called In the Flow.
Oh.
Okay. With Elisa Vitti. She has a whole program on syncing your cycle and all of that. And I a lot of what I did for myself intuitively, what I felt like I needed. And I started researching and thinking. And then even when I did yoni steaming training, and they were teaching me about the different herbs and how the herbs affect your estrogen or your progesterone levels and how you
can. You know who taught me about that? It was an Asian lady. I went to Jeju here. It was the first time I had a yoni steaming. This was, oh my God, my son is 15. This was maybe 7 or 8 years ago. It was a long time ago. And I was still living in New Jersey, because I've been out of New Jersey for almost 8 years now. So it was while I was still living in New Jersey, and I went, and the lady was like, oh, you know, they didn't call it yoni steaming. I forgot what she called.
But they call them hip baths.
Hip bath. Mm-hmm. And she asked if we wanted one. And I am that person. I'm like, yes, let's try this. And so they were like, my cousins and them were like, why do you have to be the test dummy for everything? I'm like, come on, we can do this. But she explained to me the herbs that was in there and how it helps, you know, your, she called it my lady parts, older age. She's so hilarious. Right. But she explained to me what each herb was supposed to do and how you can do this on a regular basis. This was before it was a big business. Now I kind of feel like yoni steam is everywhere, and I don't know, they even know what herbs are in the stuff that they steam it with. So I don't go get them done.
Yeah, because I, another thing with me, I always try to go with natural and stuff from the earth first.
Yes.
With the medication. So after my first miscarriage in 2013, I was trying to seek out a natural way to help me purge and cleanse and reset my body without having to go to the hospital and get a DNC done and then possibly scraping out more.
Making it worse. Yeah.
Then I can't have children later because I still wanted to have a child. So I found yoni steam. I went and got a steam done. I was living in Georgia at the time. So I went and got a steam done in Atlanta, and then found out the lady I went to, she was actually the one who teaches the yoni steam.
Wow.
She started that whole program and that whole thing, and this was 2013. So then after that, I got trained with her.
Okay.
And learned how to become a practitioner. So I was actually her last student who was taught the original way that she taught it, where it was just one huge program all wrapped up in one, where you were taught how to steam for yourself personally, how to steam and create a business to help other people with their steaming and their, you know, issues in their womb.
Yeah.
And also I was taught by her mom, who's a retired nurse, in yoni, in yoga for the yoni. Like, it was like a whole hot yoni that she teaches. So I got that whole training personally, one-on-one with her and her mom at her house, because there were supposed to be other students who said they were gonna come, and then they weren't able to. So I was the last one who had paid my monies and was ready to go. And she was like, well, everybody else was supposed to come, ain't coming. Would you want to come to my house and just be trained, just you? Because I don't want to not train you, because you're fully invested.
Already, yeah.
Yeah, so I went to her house for the weekend. Slept at her house, ate at her house, and was trained that whole time with her. And it was November of that year, Daylight Saving Time weekend, that I was there with them. And after that, she changed the process. She started teaching in two separate parts, where she taught the personal care and the practitioner training, because she realized that other people who were trained before I was, they only ended up doing it for themselves. They didn't really push, went and did to help other people. So she was like, maybe I need. So that's when she changed and did it that way. So yeah, I was trained with her. And the final day is like the graduation ceremony. We went to Jeju. And spent the night, like stayed overnight, and then I went home in the morning.
Yeah, it's a beautiful process, and I think that what you are doing is so phenomenal, and it's phenomenal for a couple of reasons. It's phenomenal because so many more, and I tell people this, it's you're never stuck with whatever somebody tells you. You just have to clear it and find the people who can help you get through it. And so what you're doing is so beautiful, because so many women are not aware of the struggles before. I kind of feel like this information needs to be given to women before they want to have kids.
Right. Which is what
I'm before, and that needs to be in the 20s. Right. Because you may never want to have them, but you need to know what's happening now, so that when you do make the decision, you are aware, you have all the information, and you know where to go and what to do, and you can prepare the body for just releasing, cleansing toxic things that we've been through.
Right.
So yeah.
Exactly.
Well, thank you for a really good conversation. Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you for agreeing to be here. This has been great. It's been so much fun getting your wisdom and your knowledge and your experience and just the things you've been through. And we're willing to be vulnerable and share with all the ladies and all of the women and all of those who identify as femme, you know, who are going to need this information in order to care for themselves. So thank you again for being here. And if someone wanted to connect with you, because I know you primarily work with other therapists.
Yeah, I work with both. I have my own private practice where I work with women, whether high achieving women, as they call they're called us. I don't know what is the high achieving part, but I work with professional women. I work with millennial women. I work with young women. That seems to be my audience, anywhere from like 18 to 35-ish. Mm-hmm. Seems to really really gravitate towards me. I don't know. It might be my youthful spirit. It might be the fact that I do very well relating to them. I even get a lot of teenagers, mm-hmm, who tell their parents, she's kind of cool for an old person. And hilarious to me. And I'm like, yeah, you know, it doesn't even move me. It's funny. But, you know, if people want to connect with me, you could go to my, mm-hmm, website, which is iabrandy.com. And I have stuff on there. So it's iyeabrandy.com. Mm-hmm. And I'm also going to be, whenever I can find the time, because the therapist trainings and stuff is taking up a lot of my time, mm-hmm, but I'm going to be coming up with a line of journals and affirmation cards and stuff like that. So they're already kind of in the works. I'm just need to create a strategy to make sure that, you know, people know about them. So, mm-hmm, that's where I am right now.
Wonderful. And we're going to put your additional information with your Instagram and all of that in the show notes for you to be contacted by the ladies who are listening and who need your support and need that therapy edge, you know, in order to add to their support system, because we need a support system. We can't do it by ourselves.
We need a community, and I'm more than happy to be part of your community. The therapeutic community for women has to be more than just a therapist, or more than just what, you know, your girlfriends. It needs to include a lot of different components, because, mm-hmm, we're so dynamic, yes, and we need to have dynamic people in our corner too.
Yes, wonderful. Well, thanks again for being here. This was fun.
You are welcome.
Thank you for listening to today's episode. I want to invite you to join us for the 50 Days of Releasing and Letting Go in order to move forward membership. We go through activities that will shift how you think, which will shift how you show up empowered for your womb health. You're going to ask for support. You're going to stop saying yes to things you want to say no to. You're going to stop allowing yourself to be last on your list. I'm here to hold space for you, because you hold space for so many people. I'm here to help you clear out all the things that don't serve you. So I look forward to seeing you in the membership group.